Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter Interior Paint is a paint and primer in one with a tough, lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's DuraFighter Paint and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Menards. Tottenham story is this. It's time to change the situation if Tottenham want to change.
I love to win, mate. That's the main thing. Hopefully I can fulfil those dreams and aspirations of every Tottenham supporter.
And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run. He scored.
That's going to have a crack. He is, you know. Oh!
I'm loving big engines instead. Guess I'm a Spurs fan now then.
Well, welcome along to what I think is going to be quite a tough edition of the Tottenham Way. Back-to-back defeats now for Spurs, having seen a 1-0 lead morph into a 2-1 defeat at Wolves. Both those goals coming late on. I'm Marcus Buckland, Dan Kilpatrick of the Evening Standard is with me. And Dan, I think we should get straight to the point. Do you think, based on those 96 minutes and the comments of Ange Postecoglou afterwards, that Spurs weren't positive enough, that that was the right result?
Yeah, I do, Marcus. Working backwards from Postecoglou's comments, he said Spurs were too passive, they weren't aggressive enough. And I've got to say, that was my assessment of the game watching them as well. You know, I felt like it was kind of a performance that belonged in last season, really. I mean, there were obviously elements that were different. There were tactical things the team was doing and the setup was a little bit different. But it felt quite Conte-ish to me, just the way they tried to cling on to that lead in the second half. And it felt like they couldn't get hold of the ball. They couldn't keep it. They couldn't really get out for long periods in the second half. And really, although conceding twice in stoppage time is I guess you could say it's a little bit unfortunate. And I guess you could say once you get to 90 minutes, you should see it out. But I think they got what they deserved in the end, Spurs. And I think it was coming for most of that second half, especially.
Yes, I would totally agree with that. And had they been playing a side with a bit more of a cutting edge, it could have got embarrassing because some of those opportunities that Wolves squandered were pretty straightforward. And we use that word being passive. The thing that got me, Dan, and it became so evident towards the end, and I don't want to give him a hard time because I thought Eric Dier played pretty well as a central defender. But we know that Spurs like to play out from the back. Towards the end, he kept launching these balls down the right-hand side. And from one of those, not surprisingly, the Wolves equaliser cropped up. And then he takes a free kick in a central position, takes it short, Spurs lose the ball and concede the winner. Why, oh why, when you have a free kick in that sort of area with a couple of minutes to go, do you not at least eat up some time by launching the ball long? And who knows, maybe even conjure a winner. That's what really infuriated me today.
Yeah, so interestingly, I think the two examples you gave there may fall into kind of different categories, really. I mean, Postecoglou was asked directly about the quick free kicks and he made a point of saying it doesn't frustrate him, that's part of the game. So obviously he wants the side to never stop. You know, that was his mantra at Celtic, and presumably it's still his mantra now at Spurs. So he wants them to play quickly. He wants them to always be looking to get forward and be looking for a goal themselves. So I think he would consider that the quick free kick, and it happened more than once actually, there were a couple of those toward the end which were turned over quickly by Wolves, but he would consider them kind of part of the game plan and a necessary risk. But I think he would have been very disappointed about Spurs kind of playing long as they got tired. There was quite a telling phrase he used in his press conference where he said he thought it was self-preservation, the kind of lack of playing out toward the end, which I think we can infer sort of meant the players were getting a bit tired, that they were kind of clinging on, they stopped playing his football. And obviously, we talked about this on the pod recently, and Postecoglou talked about it on TNT Sports with Rio Ferdinand the other day, but the Shakhtar Donetsk game when in pre-season when the players kind of dropped off and tried to make it through to half-time and he gave them a rocket in the dressing room. It felt a bit like that. It felt like they were looking at the scoreboard. They were kind of conscious they were 1-0 up and they were trying to preserve their lead. Again, it just sort of reminded me of Mourinho and and Conte 10 years. And actually, if I can just make a wider point on that, I mean, for me, the last kind of 4 years of following Spurs has felt like this great divide between fans who felt like there was a world-class coach in place, but they couldn't do anything with the players because they weren't good enough, versus fans in another camp who felt the players were okay, they weren't great, but they were fine, and they weren't being coached progressively and the tactics were wrong. And I suppose players like Dier and Davis and Højbjerg were kind of at the heart of that debate, weren't they? And I did feel today that we would see a kind of different Dier and Davis and Højbjerg under Ange, and it wouldn't be like Conte and Mourinho ball, because they're being properly coached and, you know, they're being, you know, motivated and all the rest of it under a, you know, really top manager. But actually, I've got to say, it's early days, and, you know, it was their first start to the season in the case of Dier, and, you know, the first league start centre back in the case of Davis. But still, it was kind of painfully familiar, wasn't it?
It was, and I was a little surprised to see Ben Davis given man of the match, actually, on TNT. They made the classic error of awarding that with a few minutes still to go. So many winners are being scored in the last minute. Surely you've got to hold that particular award back.
But that's kind of the thing. Until the two goals, you could have made a case that they played quite well, I think. That was the strange thing about the game. Obviously, you couldn't say that at full time. But actually, they both made some pretty crucial interventions. Dier made a couple of big tackles. So did Davis. Davis made an important block when Wolves kind of beat the offside trap in the first half. And, you know, they both did some good things. But I guess it's just the kind of vibe they give off toward the end of a game of kind of wanting to cling on and not quite having the bravery to play out. And part of that would be not playing in Ange's team and not being fit enough and sharp enough and all the rest of it. But part of it is kind of muscle memory, I guess. They played in teams that have done that for the last 4 years.
Yeah, no, I agree. Apart from the last 3 or 4 minutes, and I still think they had a pretty good game, both of them, in the circumstances. We've got to remember, as you've rightly pointed out, this is a very different side. We've got Emerson Royal coming in. We've got Højbjerg, who I love his professionalism. Again, he's got limitations. They were on show at times. The thing that worried me today, two things. First of all, and I can't make up my mind about Dejan Kulusevski. He starts off magnificently, but thereafter, I thought he was almost invisible and so predictable whenever he did get the ball again. And Sonny had one of those days where nothing worked for him. And every now and then that happens. And of course, that then puts further pressure on everybody else. And then when you look at some of those coming on to try and make a difference, Dan, we all like Brian Hill. But you just have to look at him physically. I mean, I know he does well in Spain and I can understand why, but I just can't see it working for him. Lo Celso, to be fair, when I saw the starting 11, I thought, oh, well, if he's not starting today, is he ever going to? And I actually thought that in the few minutes he was on the pitch, he very nearly made it 2-0. He produced one fantastic tackle. Of all the players sort of on the periphery, for me, Dan, he's the one now who deserves to get a chance. Would you agree with that?
I certainly wouldn't disagree. Yeah, I think he was lively. If I can make a sort of prediction, actually, I would not be surprised to see Ashley Phillips and Lo Celso starting against Villa. If you remember the first game of the season against Brentford, Postecoglou started Skip and Emerson. And I think he was going for kind of steady Eddie players, you know, good defensively. You know, you're going to get a kind of 7 out of 10 from them. They work hard. And today, obviously, in the sort of post-Madison and Van de Ven period that Spurs are entering, he went with Dier and Højbjerg as their replacements. Again, the kind of steady Eddie picks, you know, more defensive options. Perhaps you know you're going to get a kind of level of performance for them. But after the Brentford game, you know, he quickly brought in Porro and Saar and hasn't looked back, basically. And Skip and Emerson have barely got a look in. I wouldn't be surprised if it was the same after today, in that Phillips and maybe Lo Celso or possibly Bentancur come into those roles and play in the team until Madison and Van de Ven are back. I feel like it might be work out in the same way, sort of similar dynamic. Obviously, a lot depends on whether he feels an 18-year-old centre-back could really do a job in the league. And that's kind of maybe a question for another pod. But yeah, I just felt he went with the kind of experience options and it didn't work. I mean, and certainly on Lo Celso, there wasn't enough creativity in midfield. he added a little bit of that along with Bentancur, that they tried to keep the ball at least. And I think, you know, I've got my doubts about Lo Celso, I really do. But we have to remember that he does have a body of work that's very impressive in the Premier League, albeit for a really short period. You know, that period under Mourinho in Project Restart with no fans, I think it was, when he was the best player in the team, you know, 6-7 games in a row. He's really impressive. And whatever happened under Conte happened. He wasn't fancied. He really looked very poor and unsuited to the league for a bit. But we do know that he can do it because he's done it, albeit briefly. So I think he probably needs to come into the team somewhere, or Bentancur, because there was no coincidence that without Maddison, Son was just nowhere today. You know, he didn't have the service. He couldn't really hold the ball up. He wasn't getting it in good positions. He was just isolated and anonymous. And Spurs really lacked midfield creativity, I thought.
Yeah, they did. And I think it would make sense, okay, that the realism is starting to bite in. I think even we got a little carried away in the build-up to the Chelsea game, starting to think, oh, maybe Spurs are going to be title contenders in the back of our minds. I don't really think that we considered that a possibility. And now, a couple of defeats, some very tough matches to come. Obviously, we've got Aston Villa at home after the international break, then a trip to Manchester City, Newcastle on the horizon as well, although, of course, they've had a bad result at Bournemouth today. So to me, it would make sense to bring in the likes of Ashley Phillips. And this is the start, as Postecoglou is saying. So in that instance, it doesn't make a lot of sense going back to the players who've done their best for so long, but who aren't really going to be a long-term future. So I hope he does go down that particular route. It was frustrating with regards to Son, and obviously without, you know, if you're not getting the service as a striker, you are hamstrung to a degree. What about Kulusevski, though, Dan? Because he produces the lovely little flick that leads to the goal, and thereafter, he did nothing. And almost to me, when I look at him sometimes, it's almost as though he knows he's a bit predictable. He shouldn't really just cut in and try and shoot. But when he does, he doesn't do it with any real authority. If you're going to do it, really go for it, man. He is starting to frustrate me a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, he started off so well, and obviously there was that flick to Porro for the goal, which was such a nice bit of play. And we should probably mention Brendan Johnson at some point. But I thought Kulusevski was linking up really well with Porro in the opening exchanges, and it was looking very promising down that right-hand side. I don't know if I agree with you in that he was completely anonymous. I thought he showed flashes, and I thought there were several points where he was trying to do the right thing and it didn't quite come off. You know, he was chasing down a ball. He was going one-on-one with the defender, and he just wasn't quite able to get round his man. But he was playing with positive intent, and I think that's what Spurs needed.
I think he comes out second best in a lot of one-on-ones as well, though, which, you know, I don't want to hammer him too much. That's why I'm posing the question. And obviously, when we've lost a game in the manner we have, the frustration levels rise just a little bit. I just feel that there's a lot more that could come from him.
Yeah, I mean, he's not hitting the levels he was in the second half of his first season when he was really unplayable, and that left foot of his was so hard to stop when he stepped inside and bent across to the back post or had a shot. You're right, a lot of his shots, and even the goal against Chelsea, obviously, kind of seem a bit tame and a bit timid, and it was obviously lucky that his effort hit Levi Colwell's back and went in against Chelsea. And he had a couple of those today that didn't come off and then just sort of hit the defender. I guess with Kulusevski, what I would say is Spurs have bigger problems. You know, he's not the problem right now. The front three is going to have to stay as it is for the best part of a month until Richarlison's fit. It's going to be Johnson, Son and Kulusevski. There's not much Ange can really do about that. I don't think he's going to be bringing in Hill for a start anytime soon. I actually wondered if Kulusevski might be an interesting option to replace Maddison if Spurs are really lacking creativity. I mean, he's on record saying his best position is number 10. I don't think he's ever played there for Spurs. I would be intrigued to see him there, maybe with Bissouma and Saar behind him. But then who plays in his position? You know, it would have to be Hill. And as you say, I fear that he might have been the sort of one player I'm prepared to say that Conte was bang on about. You know, very talented, but just doesn't really look like a Premier League player. Looks like he can get shrugged off the ball quite easily.
Yeah, I just waiting for him to start singing Beatles songs because, you know, he just needs to put the suit on. I mean, that's what he looks like. You mentioned Johnson. I don't know if there's a curse about anyone who plays down the left for Spurs, but at one point, when he had that chance to score, and just for a moment, the little dink finish from a long way out, I thought it was going to find the back of the net, and then he went down clutching something. I don't know if you were able to pick up any sentiments afterwards as to whether he might have a knock that could cause a few more issues.
It didn't come up in Ange's post-match press conference, and I haven't spoken to anyone about it. He obviously played on for a couple of minutes and then was subbed. I hope, or I like to think, that Ange was just being sensible there and taking absolutely no risks. But yeah, that was definitely a heart and mouth moment when he seemed to pull up. And that was the best move of the second half for Spurs, really. One of the best moves of the game. They didn't put many together, but they played some nice one-touch stuff. And it was a good attempt by John, or good idea, should we say, from Jonathan. I like what he was thinking, but the execution wasn't quite there. But I think his goal was a really smart piece of play. You know, we should say that the goal was a great move. You know, I really enjoyed watching that. And, you know, after 2.5 minutes, I was kind of sitting there thinking, you know, who needs Madison and Van de Ven? You know, Spurs are going to keep playing their stuff. And it looks great. And Johnson will gain confidence from that. You know, he should. It was a great dart to the near post. He looks like he's going to be a very good fit for Postecoglou's football, I've got to say. He looked very bright against Chelsea before. Obviously, he was the fall guy when Romero was sent off too. So a bad week for Spurs, but I think we can say it's been a pretty good week for Brennan Johnson, actually.
Yeah, no, he's a fantastic signing. What do you make of Emerson Royale? He always splits opinion, of course. Came on really strongly towards the back end of last season. Barely had a look in today. How would you assess his contribution?
Yeah, I didn't think he was great today. I thought his passing was sloppy. I thought he looked stretched defensively. And actually, for long periods of that game, the worry was more him than Dyer and Davis, actually. Udogi can't come back soon enough, really. I mean, obviously, he's back for Villa. But I didn't think Emerson looked particularly comfortable there.
Yeah, of course, we will also be missing Bissouma. He got the yellow card today, so he's been walking a little bit of a tightrope. I was one of them saying, actually, maybe he should just try and survive today, get the booking against Aston Villa, and we'll basically just not bother at Manchester City the week after. But that's another little change. And this Villa game, I think, becomes quite an important one, Dan. If you look at the table, as things stand, obviously more fixtures on Sunday. We're recording this Saturday night, so Spurs are down to third. Still 26 points at the moment, just one off the top. Obviously, targets are going to change, et cetera, et cetera. And the other thing that concerned me this week, and you might know more about this, is as thoughts were going ahead towards the January transfer window and the need, obviously, to strengthen in central defence and one or two other positions, the quote I heard was that there's not much money available in January. Is that the case? And if it is, why?
I think clubs generally don't spend a huge amount in January, albeit Spurs have used the window pretty cleverly in the last couple of seasons. I think the big thing about January this season is going to be doing the business early. If you look at the last couple of years, Spurs have added to their squad and added good players to their squad, Porro last year and Bentancur and Kulusevski the year before, but all three of them are signed on deadline day. And actually, those 4 weeks this year are going to be pretty crucial because you imagine Van de Ven and Madison might only be coming back toward the middle of the month or the end of the month. And Postecoglou is on record saying he wants to get players in early, and he's mentioned that to the new sporting director. So I think trying to do some business in the first couple of weeks of January, which I know is very, very hard. It's always hard to do business in the winter window, let alone the first couple of weeks. But that would seem to me to be even more important than ever this season. Because, yeah, I mean, as you say, looking at the table, you know, suddenly Spurs could be fourth by the end of the weekend. And although at the start of the season, everyone would have taken the points total they're on now and everyone would have taken the kind of results they've had now, obviously the way it's panned out with that incredible unbeaten start to lose two in a week and lose two key players in a week as well makes everything feel a bit more precarious and hairy. And, you know, suddenly it feels like a case of just trying to get enough points to still be in the top four mix before the players start coming back in the new year.
Yeah, and of course, we've got the Africa Cup of Nations early in the new year as well, which could, I don't know, you might have to be available towards the end of January, early February, the way things are going. Interesting stat, I think it's correct that Postecoglou did not lose back-to-back, certainly league games, as Celtic manager. So this is a new experience for him in the short term, at least. Let's come up with one more positive. I thought Vicario in goal again today did absolutely everything expected of him. I always watch him and think of you saying he'll make at least one save he has no right to. And there were a couple of pretty special efforts again. So at least we can celebrate our custodian once more.
Yeah, I mean, there's almost no need to say it anymore, is there? Like, we're getting to the point where you know Vicario is going to be 8 out of 10 every game. He's just an outstanding goalkeeper and an outstanding signing. And I didn't go to the press conference on Friday, but it was interesting to see Ange kind of saying there wouldn't be that much sweeper-keepering. That was kind of exclusive to Chelsea. And actually, I wondered how much we'd see him racing off his line to cover behind Dyer and Davis, but it didn't happen that much. But yeah, he's outstanding. If I could just add one more positive, I think Bentancur coming back and being in the mix now is obviously a great thing for Spurs. I mean, this week has been all about who Spurs have lost, but just looking at who they might gain over the next couple of months can perhaps give fans some comfort. I mean, obviously, we've mentioned Lo Celso. Perhaps they could gain the Lo Celso of kind of 3 years ago. That would be a big plus if he looked like a player ready to contribute to the Premier League again. It's a big if, I think. And Bentancur, you know, it's easy to forget that he's a kind of excellent press-resistant number six or number eight. Thought he came on today and did the right things, tried to keep the ball. He still looks really rusty, and that's totally understandable, but he's got a couple of weeks now in the international break to really get up to speed on the training ground. I would have thought Villa might be too soon for him, even though Bissouma's suspended, but then, you know, could he, you know, help Spurs do a job against Manchester City in the midfield with Bissouma and maybe Lo Celso? Yeah, that would be an interesting three to go into the City game with, yeah, especially if they're kind of a bit more up to speed than they were today.
Yeah, he's also got a couple of weeks to sort his hair out. I mean, I know I shouldn't make personal comments, but mind you, if you think he's got a dodgy haircut, what is Doherty doing? Who came back on, I was convinced he was going to come and score against us. And I like Doherty. He was playing well, actually, when he had to lose his place for various reasons. But that haircut. Anyway, that's totally irrelevant. The more important point I was going to make to end, Dan, is I think the important thing here is that Spurs fans don't allow themselves to be, what is the word, manipulated perhaps by how well the season started. If I just transported you from day one to this evening and showed you that we were currently in third place with 26 points and you didn't know how the points had come, you'd say that's great. So if we can try and remember that and also look to the long-term future, as Ange says, this is you know, right at the start of proceedings. And I take your point about Bentancur. We've signed Johnson. We have got a lot of good players, some of whom are absent at the moment. This season was always going to be a big question mark. But because of the good start, we're still there or thereabouts. He's got to hope we get a half-decent run in the FA Cup. That's how I was consoling myself, at least this afternoon, Danny boy. It's not all doom and gloom. It felt like it when those two Wolves goals went in. But it's not that bad, is it?
No, it's not that bad at all. And, you know, I'll make a prediction, because I know you mock me for refusing to make predictions. But I'll say now, I still think Spurs will finish in the top four. Fairly comfortably. I really do. You know, in Postecoglou, they've got a great coach. I think he'll find a way to get them through this period with enough points to still be in the mix. They'll get their players, their important players, you know, Maddison and Van der Ven back in January. They'll strengthen the squad a little bit in January. Some of the players who looked off the pace today will get up to speed a little bit more. And I think Spurs will be fine. I really do. I think it's going to be a rocky few weeks. Villa, I think, will be rocky. City will certainly be rocky. And then I think West Ham and Newcastle are coming up, aren't they? And,
they could be pretty rocky too, I think.
And it's going to be tough, but you know that is the Premier League. But I've got full kind of confidence that Spurs, as I said, will sort of pick up enough points to still be in a very competitive position when these players come back. And look, the other thing to say really is that I think this situation and the fact that Spurs struggled today isn't a huge surprise. I mean, we've been saying on this pod since the start of the season, it was an almighty gamble going to the season with the lack of centre-back cover. It always looked like there was a lack of cover for Maddison as well. It always looked like the squad was thin. So none of this should be particularly surprising, really. It's obviously gutting for fans, especially the manner of today's defeat, the two last-minute goals. But it shouldn't be a huge surprise. This was the reality going to the season. We're near the start of Postecoglou's rebuild, his project, whatever you want to call it. And I think he's got more than enough credit in the bank already.
Yeah, well, listen, I started this podcast saying it could be a tough addition, but partly because Tom Allnutt's not involved, there's been a lot of optimism. we'll get his...
Interesting to see Tom Allnutt on Twitter today talking about how belief's more important than wins. I saw with Postecoglou. Really has changed his tune from the last pod.
Backtracking already. Well, we'll get his very considered opinions next week once the dust has settled. Obviously got an international week coming up. I think we may have one of Mr. Barkley's special themed team editions as well. That hasn't been confirmed as yet, but either way, we shall reconvene sooner rather than later. Danny, anything else you want to add before you head off to a little family party?
No, I think I've got it out of my system. I've said everything I need to say. If only the international break was longer. I've always said how much I love international breaks. You know, if only this one was 2 months long, then everything would be fine.
It feels like every other week has been an international break, but a chance for Spurs to get a couple of players fully fit again. Thank you, Danny Kaye. That's Dan Kilpatrick of the Evening Standard. I'm Marcus Buck. And keep your thoughts coming in to us. We appreciate the reviews, the suggestions, what you'd like from us, what you'd like a little less from us. So do not hesitate to get in touch. I am indeed Marcus Buckland. I think I've said that once already. Come on, you Spurs.